DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
If I live to be like 80, 85, 90 years old, I hope to look back on my life and see a lot of fond memories. And for me, a lot of those fond memories are going to involve sports. Just because I'm a huge sports fan, I've been lucky enough to cover sports here in my life, including this time at DogNation.com, and is the host of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. And so if you think about what a lifetime's worth of sports memories can kind of look like, I think that for me, an outsized portion of those memories are going to involve the 2017 season, no matter what Georgia goes on to do. Can win a national championship this season, can win multiple national championships over the course of the next few years. But for me, that 2017 season is always going to have a special place in my mind, and if you'll allow me to say it, in my heart as well. And I think that Georgia fans are a big part of that. You know, seeing the way that the stadium was taken over in South Bend, Indiana, seeing the throngs of Georgia fans that also accompanied UGA out to California for the Rose Bowl, and every moment in between, a lot of those raucous environments in Sanford Stadium included, for me, are just one of the things that makes 2017 one of the great sports memories of my lifetime. And I'm going to predict that it's going to remain one of those no matter how much better things get for Georgia fans here in the future. And here at SEC Media Days this week, it's been really kind of cool to hear other voices from around the SEC kind of validating what many of us believe about the role that Georgia fans played in a special 2017. Even in some cases, what we think of as Georgia rivals sort of paying due respect to the atmosphere created by Georgia fans, both on the road and in Sanford Stadium. An example of that is something we started the show with yesterday, the Florida defensive lineman CC Jefferson. Jefferson, normally a guy we think of as a pretty significant foe of Georgia, but as a quick reminder of what he said yesterday to take us where we want to go today, here he is saying, boy, I wish I could have played in Sanford Stadium because of how cool Georgia fans make that atmosphere and environment there. Here's Jefferson from audio we played yesterday.
I kind of wish we went to Georgia and played at Georgia. I wouldn't mind it, man. I wouldn't mind it. Because I ain't going to lie, it gets lit between them hedges, man. You know, at night, I seen where they, you know, light the cell phones up and stuff. And, man, it gets loud in there, man. And I think we should... I wouldn't mind, like, going from our stadium to their stadium every year. You know, we don't have to go to Jacksonville every year.
So the debate about where the Georgia-Florida game should be played is one that I'm sure we'll have 9 million times in the future here on our program. But for the moment, let's just focus in on what CC Jefferson says there, that he thinks it gets lit inside Sanford Stadium. Now, he means that both literally and figuratively, I guess, lit in terms of how exciting it is, but also sort of lit up by the cell phones and the fourth quarter Krypton song that plays there. And that's a cool thing for me as well, and it's kind of nice to see that CC Jefferson has noticed that watching these Georgia games on television. But the reason why I play that off the top of the show today is because Jefferson's not the only player talking about how great Georgia fans have been both in Sanford Stadium and beyond Sanford Stadium recently. Nick Fitzgerald's the Mississippi State quarterback, a guy that came to Athens last year and took a beatdown from the Georgia Bulldogs in a game that was maybe somewhat surprising to some of the people who thought Mississippi State might be an SEC team on the rise as it came into Athens a year ago. But Fitzgerald, when thinking back on that game and being asked what's the loudest stadium you've been to, once again, he throws a big-time compliment Georgia fans' way. Let me show you a quote that was reported on by our colleagues and friends over at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Here is Mississippi State quarterback Nick Fitzgerald saying, the first time going in there to play was a completely different experience. He means he had grown up there as a fan, seeing games there. It was probably the loudest college football stadium I've ever played in. Now, how nice is that to hear if you're a Georgia fan here? I don't know that was said about Georgia a lot in the 90s. Maybe sometimes even in the early 2000s. I don't know that you necessarily got a lot of that necessarily in terms of Sanford Stadium between the hedges, loudest stadium in college football. Now, there's a lot of intense competition to be that. It's kind of nice to hear at least a couple of the dignitaries around the SEC saying Georgia belongs in that conversation. In fact, let me go back in time here to that game in September when Georgia did look impressive on the field against those maroon Bulldogs, and the Georgia fans were impressive in creating the atmosphere and environment. Nick Fitzgerald talked about that then. Let me go back in time. Fitzgerald's obviously from the state of Georgia, coming between the hedges, was something that he had thought a lot about. Here is Fitzgerald from then.
Growing up, you know, you hear the fight song all the time. You know, I'm pretty sure my alarm clock was like part of the fight song at one point in my life. So, you know, hearing that, I mean, it was kind of brought me back to where I was younger. But, I mean, you know, and that was just, like I said, all week, it was another game that I had to come out and win. It just didn't happen.
just another game they had to come out and win. He says it didn't happen there at the end. And as far as reasons go why it didn't happen, Fitzgerald did give some credit to the crowd noise for making things tough on his Bulldogs offense. Here he was from September talking about then what would now be thought of as the loudest stadium he's ever played in.
We knew it was going to be loud. We knew we weren't going to be able to talk to each other really that day. We practiced that all week, so we were prepared for that. We played in Death Valley, Alabama, and all that kind of stuff, so we were prepared for that.
So the reason why I bring this up on the show today is obviously it's kind of nice to hear Georgia fans get this kind of compliment, especially someone like myself who considers himself a Georgia fan. It's kind of cool to hear Georgia fans sort of spoken about in this way, but this is not just empty praise here. There is something tangible at stake here, too, because we know that one of the big plans that Kirby Smart has for Sanford Stadium in 2018 and beyond is to showcase a brand new recruiting facility. And there's a brand new locker room. It's the whole West End Zone. You've seen a lot of the pictures of the development as it kind of rises up and becomes a part of Sanford Stadium. And a big part of that is above that weight room, kind of behind the stands, is going to be an area where recruits can sort of hang out, receive a little hospitality, but also have that kind of like patio area, I think I'm describing this correctly, that little patio area where they can sort of step out and sort of watch the game as it goes on and sort of soak all of that in. And you better believe that when these recruits come, one of the things they're soaking in is the atmosphere created by UGA fans. So it actually has a double benefit here. It makes it tougher for opponents to come in and win games, which is a good thing, but it also makes it tougher for recruits to say no to those overtures by Georgia. But how about you come play in this stadium for the next 3 or 4 years for yourself and hear these cheers cheering on you for the next 3 or 4 years? Loud crowds and Georgia fans have done a good job of creating that kind of environment benefit the program more ways than one. All right, let me shift gears here and talk about something completely different just for a moment. I want to follow up on something else that's been sort of a hot topic at SEC Media Days over the last couple of days, and that is whatever it was that went on with Jeremy Pruitt at Georgia back in 2014 and 2015. You'll remember that the former Georgia quarterback, Aaron Murray, despite the fact that he didn't play at Georgia during Pruitt's time at UGA, told a Nashville radio station that he thought that Pruitt was unfit to be a head coach, that he couldn't handle the CEO role because of some of his antics at Georgia, at least perceived by Murray, disrespectful to Mark Richt, is one of the things that Aaron Murray said, and that obviously reverberated around the SEC in a big way. We had our take on that on this show yesterday. I don't fail to acknowledge that there may have been some moments when Jeremy Pruitt sort of stepped out of bounds with some of the things that he did. I also believe that some of his intensity was a dose of something that Georgia probably needed a lot of back in 2014 and 2015. But whatever, that's water under the bridge for now. It is interesting to note that Jeremy Pruitt did respond to some of this criticism when he was at SEC Media Days. Here he is speaking to a gaggle of reporters about what he thought about what Aaron Murray had to say.
Well, first of all, I coached against Aaron, and he was a fantastic player, great competitor. But, I grew up a coach's son, so when you're standing on the sideline, your dad's high school team is going 2-8, the folks up in the stands, even in Rainsville, Alabama, they're not real happy. So I realized at an early age that everybody has an opinion, and my dad told me, he said, as long as they pay their money, son, they can say whatever they want to. So I'm going to worry about the things that I can.
So that's intentionally an attempt on Pruitt's part to disregard the criticism of Aaron Murray, almost not even granting the premise of it. It is worth pointing out, though, that in another gaggle of reporters, and that's kind of the way SEC Media Days works, these guys sort of bounce around from room to room and different groups of reporters in different places. David Ubben, who is a reporter that writes for Tennessee, covers the Vols, he tweeted out a different quote from a different spot with Jeremy Pruitt. And if you're watching, let me show this to you on the screen. If you're listening, I'll read it to you. David Ubben quotes Jeremy Pruitt as saying, 15 years ago, I was a kindergarten teacher. Now, pause on that for a moment. Imagine the fact that at one point in time, Pruitt taught kindergarten. But nonetheless, Pruitt goes on to say, now I'm the head coach at Tennessee. You probably don't make that ascension without knowing how to treat people. So that's the quote from Jeremy Pruitt as captured by David Ubben, a guy that covers the Tennessee Vols. What you don't hear Jeremy Pruitt say there, though, is, there's nothing from my past that disproves my ability to be a head coach, and there's nothing to validate what Aaron Murray's saying. Overall, Jeremy Pruitt's tact here is slightly different on that. It almost seems like he wants to sort of move on from that, and maybe with good reasons, because I can't help but notice one more screen grab I want to show you here on the screen, a tweet from Dan Matthews, an Atlanta radio producer and host from 680 The Fan, who's at ACC Media Days, caught up with Mark Richt on all of this scuttlebutt and hullabaloo. And Rick, when asked about what Jeremy Pruitt has said this week, what Aaron Murray said about Jeremy Pruitt, here's the quote from ACC Media Days from former Georgia coach Mark Richt. Here's the deal, Rick says. I'm at Miami. He's at Tennessee. I'm going to talk about Miami, and I'm sure he wants to talk about Tennessee, so we'll leave it at that. Once again, that's a Rick quote as captured by Dan Matthews up there at ACC Media Days, which, listen, I'm reading between the lines here, but that seems like a bit of a repudiation of Pruitt, just given the fact that Rick doesn't try to deflect on Pruitt's part there, just sort of leaves the criticism dangling, which I think you read into that maybe a little bit, although maybe it's unfair to do so on the other hand. The bottom line for me on the entire discussion is this, that, you know, for a Georgia fan, maybe there's a natural curiosity to sort of go back and rehash the Pruitt era at Georgia and what he did. Was he disrespectful to Rick? Was he not? Did Georgia need some of what he brought to the table in terms of his competitive fire and his intensity, or did it not? That's a debate that I'm willing to have, and I'm sure that'll go on in some form or fashion when Georgia fans get together for many years to come. However, the overall bigger picture is, maybe for Georgia fans, though, in the Georgia program, it's actually just sort of a lucky break that Georgia gets the coach it gets now with Kirby Smart. Because if you'll think about it, the intensity of Jeremy Pruitt, the diplomacy of Mark Richt, aren't they sort of nicely melded together in the personality of Kirby Smart? This is a guy that certainly wakes up and chews on intensity every single day. His passion for attacking the day is a legendary here. But we also see him in those softer, quieter moments, and he's comfortable there as well. Camp Sunshine in the summer is an example of that. Unscripted moments that are caught on video with recruits, another example of that. This guy that's also comfortable in his own skin and certainly fully growing into the role of CEO. So whatever Jeremy Pruitt is or isn't going to be for Tennessee may not be much of a problem for Georgia fans, because they know they've got a coach that's sort of fully formed in both of these areas. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Thanks for being with us. Whether you watch us live every morning at 10 on the Dog Nation Facebook, Dog Nation YouTube, or the Dog Nation Twitter feed, you listen to us on the radio maybe at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, or in podcast form on Apple Podcasts, the Google Podcast player as part of the Android devices. Some of you subscribe to SoundCloud. Some of you, or you don't have to subscribe, but you just have the app on your phone, I mean. Or you just check out the show at the worldfamousdognation.com. Whatever you do, however you get here, thanks for being a part of Dog Nation Daily, and thanks to Marco's Pizza as well. And if you haven't taken advantage yet of the great offer that Marco's Pizza has for you, I don't know what to tell you. This is a good deal on authentic Italian-quality pizza. It's two medium, two-topping pizzas for just $6.99 each. It's every store, every day, the Italian way. That means that authentic Giammarco family recipe sauce, the three cheeses blended together. Boy, it makes me hungry right now. We always do this show, you know, in the 10 o'clock hour, and I eat breakfast like 5 in the morning. So by the time we get to 10 in the morning, I'm already pretty hungry. Every day when I talk about Marco's Pizza during the show, it makes me want to reach over and grab a piece of sausage and pepperoni, which is my choice for the two-medium, two-topping pizza there. And I love the price, $6.99 each. Go to Marcos.com. You can find the Marcos nearest you. We'll have my friend and buddy Mike Johnson here coming up in just a moment today. Before we get to that, I also want to sort of go back to SEC Media Days for something else that happened this week. And you may have read this piece at DogNation.com from the newest member of our team, Mike Griffith, who's doing a great job. And I want to play you some audio that Mike actually captured talking to Georgia safety JRE. Now, in this audio in particular, I set this up a certain way. Normally, you know, I edit questions out of the clips we play. You just hear from the coach or from the player. In this particular case, I think it's important to hear Mike Griffith's question to J.R. Reed and then J.R. Reed's answer, because there is a laser focus that you hear in Reed's voice when talking about his goals for the upcoming season. Take a listen to Mike Griffith asking J.R. Reed, how do you approach this year given what happened a year ago?
How do you guys deal with last year? I mean, you could stand here as SEC champions, or you could stand here with a chip on your shoulder after losing in the championship game. Which mode is it that Georgia moves forward with?
I mean, ultimate goal is to win the Natty. And, you know, SEC championship doesn't mean anything if you don't win a national championship. So that's where we are right now.
So I think if you're a Georgia fan, you love that intensity that, listen, we did the SEC championship a year ago. We're focused on finishing, to borrow the old Mark Richt phrase, finishing the drill here in 2018. Our goal is to win a national championship. And yet when you read the quote, one of the things that sort of jumps out at that is, you know, the insinuation that the SEC championship is not important. I don't believe that's what J.R. Reed's saying there. If you listen to the way the question's framed, he's saying, given the choice of one over the other, we're not going to rest on our laurels of the SEC championship. We're going to be focused in on the national championship. So you know, when you understand the full context of the answer, it sort of changes the nature of that conversation. But it is also probably worth pointing out here that we are kind of in an age and an era where some people, I think, are starting to devalue conference championships a bit. You see this with the national media sometimes. They say that, you know, games like the SEC championship game are nothing more than a ticket to be punched to the college football playoff, and whatever prestige the SEC championship once had, that doesn't exist anymore. This is something I actually want to talk about a little bit more in today's episode of our program, because while I don't think that J.R. Reid is saying SEC championships don't matter, I think there are some people out there who would suggest that is the case, and frankly, I hope that's not the evolution that college football is moving towards. I want to make my case for, while no one can deny the national championships the ultimate goal, conference titles are still pretty important, too. I'll try to make that case coming up in a moment. It's great to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. A lot of fun and surprises on the way. But for now, let's talk to a guy that knows the SEC as well as anybody. It's our good buddy Mike Johnson. And, of course, for those of you who do watch SEC Country Live and have been good enough to do that with us over the course of the last year-plus doing the show, you may have heard us make the announcement this past week that this is our final week doing that show in its current form, live every Monday through Thursday at 3 p.m. on the SEC Country video channels, primarily the SEC Country Facebook page. And we obviously are going to finish off our week and our broadcast time together, at least for this particular show in this particular format, today at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. I'd love to have everybody join us for that as we kind of say farewell and talk a little bit about what Mike and I have planned to do next. Of course, as I've explained here, nothing's going to change for Dog Nation, including frequent appearances by Mike Johnson. That's something we continue to look forward to. But, Mike, I did want to have you on today. Obviously, talk a lot about the SEC stuff, and we'll do a lot of that kind of stuff the way we always do. But just to sort of share, I think, what is for you and me a little bit of mutual appreciation for the fact that what SEC Country Live has been over this last year has been something, I think, for both of us, really, really fun, and hopefully a unique perspective on the SEC, a league that for very different reasons you and I both care a whole lot about.
Yeah, it's definitely a bittersweet day, and I don't even know if bittersweet's the right word for it. It just stinks, downright stinks, that we won't be able to climb onto the set Monday and be able to talk about all the latest in the SEC. But, you know, I still find myself too, BA, all the stuff coming out of SEC media days and all the storylines, I wake up in the morning and I'm watching the news and I'm reading the headlines and my head's still spinning, man. I can't wait to get to SEC Country Live and be able to cover some of this stuff and be able to talk about it in depth. That's going to be the toughest adjustment. But like you said, SEC Country Live has been a vehicle, I think, for both of us, especially me, to where I don't even recognize myself when I go back and watch some of those earlier episodes. So I'm very thankful. Very thankful for that opportunity to have stepped in front of the camera and, to have kind of gotten my feet wet in the business.
Well, one thing we know for sure is that you're going to be talking with the SEC for a long time to come, and I wish we were capable of making all those announcements, explaining how you're going to be doing that and explaining how you and I may have a chance to do some of this stuff together. Timing is sort of, you know, the key to life here, and the timing may not be quite right now to sort of talk about some of that kind of stuff, but have no fear. We will talk a lot about that when we can, and we'll kind of give you a bit of an update on that here in a moment when we get ready to close things out. But for now, let me kind of go back to the business of the day here. And, you know, I'm going to spend a few minutes on the show later on kind of talking about my thought on conference championships, because Georgia safety J.R. Reid was talking about, you know, his goal for the upcoming season, what he believes the team's goal for the upcoming season is. And he says, you know, Georgia's focused on winning what he calls a natty or a national championship, which is sort of the nickname for that. In the midst of doing that, he says, hey, we're not thinking about SEC championships anymore. And I totally understand where J.R. Reid's coming from on that. I don't believe that he's saying that SEC championships don't matter anymore. But I think, Mike, there are some people in the media who would suggest that's true. In fact, there's some people in the media who suggest that college football would be better if there was an 8-team playoff and you do away with the conference championship games and you sort of make this more and more about the playoff and sort of less and less about conference championships. Mike, I don't mind telling you that, you know, I'm proud of being the fact that my favorite team's the SEC champion. And even though your alma mater's the reigning national champion, I don't shy away from the fact that I still think while the national championship's the ultimate goal, an SEC championship for me still means one. I hope that Georgia hangs a banner in Sanford Stadium. Pretty sure that it will. You know, it seems to do that for all of its SEC championships. And I hope that the college football conversation doesn't evolve in the future where all this stuff is just sort of marginalized, because, you know, I do think conference championships matter.
No, I definitely agree with you. And I think that, first of all, I think the conversation comes up due to a few different things. I think the playoff definitely plays a huge part in that. I mean, when I was back in school in 08 and 09, we're playing an SEC title game. That is the semifinal game. You know, we are 1-2 trying to play our way into a national title game. So winning that SEC championship guaranteed us a chance to get to that national championship at the time. Another thing to look at is this. You know, listen, these guys are hungry to get to the next level. You know, we won the SEC West in 08, did not win the SEC title. Everybody's like, well, you had a good year. You won the West. You got a chance to go to Atlanta. But the goal had moved at that point. The target had moved. We no longer wanted to just get to Atlanta. We wanted to win the SEC championship in Atlanta. And so those things tend to kind of migrate for some of these different players and the way their outlook is. It's almost like, okay, checklist. You know, we got that done. We did that. We've been there, done that. We didn't get to extend it past that. And I think that just speaks to the hunger of that Georgia football team that says, hey, that just wasn't good enough last year. That's not what we want to get accomplished. And I think they understand the unique situation that Georgia football is in this year, where really a lot of those goals, you know, could be attained with some quality games over the course of the next few months.
And to just give a little context for this, you know, I'm old enough. We don't talk a lot of basketball, you and I, but I'm old enough to remember back. You know, Georgia won the SEC in 1990 in basketball, and I remember people walking around wearing, you know, SEC championship basketball T-shirts. You know, obviously, my favorite school is not really in the mix for SEC championships as much lately, but I don't see anyone bragging about basketball conference championships anymore. That is a thing that is sort of completely dissolved now. Almost no one seems to care about that. It's all about March Madness. It's all about the NCAA tournament. And, you know, once again, Mike, that's an example of how things can change in a sport, and I got to say that I hope that's not the change that one day comes for football, really for Georgia or any other school. You know, I think there's going to be always room in Sanford Stadium for Georgia hanging those conference championship flags.
No, I agree with you, and you know, to add on to what I was saying a minute ago too, this is a definite product of playing in the SEC. When you win a Big Ten title, when you win a Big 12 title, when you win a Pac-12 title, those teams are excited for those things. That doesn't automatically lead you into being in the college football playoff. But if you win the SEC title, you're going to be in the college football playoff. And that's just kind of the nature of the beast when you do play in the SEC. You know, the projections of what your team could possibly be and the quality of football is going to be up there to where you say, hey, listen, that's just one goal along the way. Yes, it's a nice check mark. But when you set your sights, and I think this is kind of what they're talking about and probably something Kirby Smart's talking about behind the scenes, when you set your sights on an SEC championship, sometimes you tend to forget that there's games after that. You know, boy, I can't wait to get to that SEC championship this year. Our goal is getting to Atlanta. Well, guess what? You get to Atlanta, you win Atlanta, and you have to kind of reset your sights. And so I definitely think that's something to kind of keep in focus for them.
Yeah, and I want to be clear. I don't think that J.R. Reed in any way, form, or fashion was devaluing an SEC championship, but I think it's about what Mike just said there. It's about setting your sights now on the goal that's still yet to be accomplished, Mike, and I think that's well said in that regard. All right, let's talk about Jeremy Pruitt here for a moment because we've got some more sort of developments on this. Obviously, the backstory here for the people who may be just joining us in this conversation, Aaron Murray sort of suggested that Pruitt may be unfit to be a head coach. Reference what Murray thought was disrespect from Pruitt going back to his time as a Georgia defensive coordinator towards his then boss, Mark Richt. Pruitt's responded to this in his own way at SEC Media Days. Mark Richt given a chance to answer for this at ACC Media Days and essentially deflected and just sort of begged off the whole thing. And for me, you know, Mike, the Rick non-answer here kind of comes across as a guy that had a chance to throw a lifeline to Jeremy Pruitt, chose not to do it. Maybe I'm guilty of reading too much into that. But that's the way that I read that. How do you kind of respond to the fact that Rick, you know, didn't come to the aid of Pruitt at the notion of being disrespected at Georgia? It feels like the kind of thing that if there had been a true factual inaccuracy there, feels like the kind of thing that Rick would have felt compelled to speak up on.
Yeah, it's just an interesting dynamic at this point, B.A., and I think to me it kind of falls back to, listen, I've met Mark Richt. He's a great guy. Everybody knows that Mark Richt's a great guy. I know and love Jeremy Pruitt. I've met Aaron Murray. I know Aaron Murray, consider him a friend. He's a great guy as well. I think this is just a classic case of not everybody's always going to get along. You have personality clashes, especially in a professional work environment and a high-pressure situation like it is SEC football when your coach is on the hot seat. And so, you know, listen, I had some Alabama fans that I talked to yesterday that were kind of upset at the comments from Aaron Murray. And my answer to that was, listen, if Lane Kiffin had got the job down at LSU and had, you know, you didn't think he had treated Nick Saban with a ton of respect, you'd probably say a lot of the same things about Lane Kiffin. It's just one of those things where you feel compelled to protect the guy that was your coach and a guy that you looked up to as a leader and a guy you highly respected. And while I know that Mark Richt, obviously, like you said, did not choose to throw out the lifeline to Jeremy Pruitt, I don't think I look at either one of those guys any differently. I still have a ton of respect for Mark Richt and what he's able to do, and the football coach that he is, and I feel the same way about Jeremy Pruitt. I just don't know that their personalities matched up. I think that they saw things a little bit differently in terms of the situation they were in, and that's why they've moved on from each other, and that's why they're not in the same place anymore. But I still think both will have a ton of success.
Well, I think that's a really interesting way to say that, Mike. You know, I was actually doing this show back in 2015. Now, we weren't on the radio back then. We weren't doing the show on video live back then. We were just a podcast. But we were, you know, a podcast cranking out every single day. And it was a tough conversation back in 2015 when the Pruitt era was going to come to an end, maybe even before the season came to an end. And certainly the Richt era ultimately came to an end that year as well, where you had this conflict between Jeremy Pruitt, a football guy that I respected, who I thought was bringing a passion and an intensity that Georgia needed, and yet maybe doing it at the expense of a guy in Richt that I and most of my audience legitimately loved. It was a weird conflict there where you almost saw two sides of the same personality coin, or the opposite sides of the personality coin. You know, Richt had the diplomacy and the sort of statesmanship that you want a head coach to have. Pruitt had the competitive fire. You hope to be able to blend that into one guy. Maybe that's what Kirby Smart is. But at the time, it was sort of a weird conflict for Georgia fans to decide, whose side do I want to be on here, the Pruitt side or the Richt side?
Yeah, no, and that's what it is. And that's what I try to tell people. You don't always have to get along. There's so much pressure in these coaching situations. And you have one guy that's used to one way, you have one guy that's used to another way. And listen, Jeremy Pruitt, as a defensive coordinator, won a heck of a lot of football games at three different schools. Mark Richt, as a head coach, has won a heck of a lot of football games at a couple of different schools. And that's just the way I kind of look at it. I think that, listen, when you listen to the Georgia players, I mean, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, B.A., when you listen to the Georgia players, they love Jeremy Pruitt. They hope that Jeremy Pruitt stayed around after some of the fallout from those things back in 2015. And, you know, listen, Jeremy Pruitt's a quality guy. He kind of said it yesterday. Listen, you don't come from being a kindergarten teacher to the head coach of Tennessee if you don't know how to treat people. I just think they had a different way of looking at football teams and looking at a football roster, and maybe those things clashed at some point. And Mark Richt having the personality that he has, Jeremy Pruitt was never going to come off being the good guy in that situation. So it's unfortunate. And I think that it's one of those things that's an SEC Media Days topic, but for Jeremy Pruitt, winning will cure all if he's able to do it up to Tennessee.
Oh, what are your thoughts about Kirby Smart, his performance at SEC Media Days this week? It seems like it's, you know, drawing some, you know, fairly universal praise for a guy that sort of looks like a rising star. Obviously, he's the reigning SEC champion, but you know, you think back to a couple years ago when this guy was sort of doing all this for the first time, maybe looking down at his notes a lot, making sure he didn't say the wrong thing, making sure that he delivered the words and the cadence that he thought coaches were supposed to deliver them in. And now he's sort of speaking off the cuff and, you know, genuinely seemingly comfortable in his own skin there. I mean, I guess I'm sort of setting you up to hear what Georgia fans want to hear. But what did you think of how Smart kind of handled his business here this week?
Well, listen, I had a chance to kind of shake hands and say hello to Kirby Smart and do the same thing with Jeremy Pruitt. And I think the difference between those two small three-sentence conversations to me told all the difference. Jeremy Pruitt was all business. You know, he had like a sheen to himself where it was like, God, I don't want to say he was glazed over, but he, you know, he had his head on a swivel. Jeremy Pruitt, he was not comfortable, I guess is the right way to say it. He was still getting used to getting these questions and getting peppered from all angles and spending hours, you know, on the SEC network set and talking to Paul Feinbaum and talking to all these different people. He's still getting used to that. The Kirby that I saw walk through the door, more of a politician. I mean, he looked polished. He was shaking hands. He had a smile on his face. He wanted to talk to people. He had that aura when you walk in the room. He had that swagger that you and I talked about it last year, that Will Muschamp had a little bit of. It just looked comfortable in his own skin with where he was at. And I think that comes from obviously having been through this, and I think it also comes from the accomplishments that he's had at Georgia so far, that he feels really good about where that program is and where it's headed, and you know, I think he feels comfortable walking into some of those questions that he now has answers for.
One of the things that you and I have talked about a lot is that, and we're obviously not the only ones who've said this, but there are some seeming similarities between the Georgia and Alabama quarterback situation, given, you know, the fact that there's a starter that people seem to like, you know, I guess the best way to say there's two good quarterbacks potentially at both these programs, but one of the things that I think is different about how Alabama and Georgia were discussed at SEC Media Days, Georgia on Tuesday, Alabama yesterday, is I feel like that Kirby Smart was able to be very forthright about how things are going. I feel like that he could say everything that he knows and thinks about both Fromm and Fields, and it can kind of all be out in the open there. I thought that Saban yesterday was forced to be a little bit more guarded, especially about Jalen Hurts, who's probably the greater threat to transfer at this point. Do you feel like that Saban sort of indicated yesterday that it's a quarterback situation that's a bit different from Georgia's? Yes, there are two guys who are both going to get a lot of attention, but there's also sort of a political landmine to navigate for us, Saban, here?
No, there's no doubt about it. And listen, I think the situations are similar because you do have two different styles of quarterback at both different places. You know, this conversation didn't come up so much when it was Jacob Eason and Jake Fromm, because you had, you know, two similar style quarterbacks. With the two different style of quarterbacks, I think Nick Saban was forced to kind of come out swinging yesterday. I was kind of shocked at some of the quotes that you saw come out of Nick Saban and some of the statements he made in front of some of the audience. And I think Nick Saban was just making the statement, hey, listen, you're not going to back me into a corner here. I know that, you know, the parents of these quarterbacks are coming out and this situation's blowing up, but this is still left to be played out. And so I think that you don't have that at Georgia right now because you probably are a year ahead of that. It's hard to make the case that a guy you have not seen in a Georgia uniform yet is, you know, should be the starting quarterback. So I think that, you know, that's something Kirby Smart's going to have to grow through and kind of see that coming down the road. But as far as the question mark between the two universities, Nick Saban's definitely dealing with it a lot heavier right now.
Let me do one quick final question here before we let you go. You're going to fill out your preseason ballot for SEC Media Days this week. It's a little trickier to do than some people might think. You just get blank spots there. You can write in any names you want to on your preseason All-SEC teams, obviously your order of finish. I won't ask you to read your whole ballot off here, but any surprises, anything interesting from the preseason ballot you plan to cast here at SEC Media Days as the week closes out in downtown Atlanta?
Yeah, I don't know that there were any surprises so much. I did find it, and this is my first time ever voting, for the SEC Media Days and being a part of that kind of media ballot. You know, I looked at it, honestly, and this is, I can say this because I'm a Bama guy on Dog Nation. I thought this was going to be an Alabama-Georgia fill-in-the-blank with some Auburn guys sprinkled in there. It wasn't so much like that. There are a ton of quality players throughout the SEC, and they don't really give you a criteria. It's like, you know, am I supposed to judge this on what this guy has done or what he could be, or is it a projection of, you know, guys coming back off injury? Where do you stick Nick Fitzgerald? Where do you stick Debo Samuel? Where do you put some of these guys? So I don't know that there were a ton of surprises. But there were a few projections that I put in some of my ballot of guys that I think can end up being very good down the road this season and that I think that really have the talent to get to that level where they will be upper echelon players by the end of the year.
All right, if you're a Dog Nation Daily listener or viewer and you want to find out what's next for Mike and I together and also some interesting stuff from Mike as well, check out the SEC Country Live YouTube feed or our podcast, which is very much like this podcast, SEC Country Live in podcast form. Our next announcements about the things that we have planned are going to take place right there. SEC Country Live on YouTube, SEC Country Live on podcast. Let me be very, very clear. I believe there's also an SEC Country YouTube page, but it's the SEC Country Live YouTube page that you want to subscribe to, and you'll get those informations about when Mike and I are getting back together again in the very near future. We're looking forward to that, and we're looking forward to having you all join us at 3 p.m. Eastern Time this afternoon as we say goodbye in style on SEC Country Live. Mike, you are a valued resource for us here on Dog Nation Daily. Your SEC opinions and analysis, it's always top-notch, and we'll certainly look forward to talking to you soon.
I sure do appreciate it, man, and it's going to be a fun episode this afternoon, and like I said, bittersweet, but you know, we'll go out in style and make sure we continue to give it our best.
1,000%. Thanks, Mike.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So a true story here. You know, Mike at the end was kind of talking about his SEC preseason ballot, and, you know, I don't go to SEC Media Days every year. I go some years, and some years I'm there for a long time. Some years I'm not there as much. It's never been as big a week on my calendar as it is for other people. You know, I do this show for fans. I don't do this show for other media. You know, sometimes SEC Media Days can kind of come across like media camp. You know, it's sort of the convention for reporters, and I'd rather, you know, sometimes do other things. But I do go frequently enough, and when you see that ballot given to you for the SEC, like the preseason team, and it's nothing but sort of blank spaces, and you kind of, you know, write your names in, every year I sort of find myself in the same spot of I get about halfway through the ballot. I'm like, boy, this is too hard, you know, and I end up not turning mine in. So I don't know that I've ever actually officially turned in a ballot for an SEC preseason choice, but they will come out later on today. I am curious, not so much about the preseason team, although that's somewhat interesting. I think we can all have a decent idea of the Georgia names that are going to be on there. I'm sort of curious about how many votes are given to teams in the East other than Georgia for winning this division. I do think that'll be a real curiosity, and obviously we'll talk more about that tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. One more point about Mike here as we get ready to do our last day of SEC Country Live today. You know, Mike's a great friend. He is a guy that I genuinely enjoy working with. That's why I plan on working with him again at some point in time. That's why he's going to be no stranger to us here on Dog Nation Daily. And so I just really am grateful for the time that we've been able to do on this show and looking forward to celebrating that later on today, 3 p.m. Eastern time. Hope you'll be with us for our swan song there. As far as the SEC through goes, let me bounce in here and get a few topics in. Final day, as I said, of SEC Media Days from downtown Atlanta. Three schools going today. It's Auburn, it's Vanderbilt, it's South Carolina. I guess Auburn, as I'm doing this live during the 10 o'clock hour here on the East Coast or the Eastern time zone, I guess Auburn's kind of already kind of going through a lot of this stuff. And you imagine a lot of the conversation about Auburn is going to center around, you know, where the season looked like it was in November to where it kind of finishes up at in January. You know, by the end of November, Auburn was holding on to a victory against Georgia, a victory against Alabama, and then it's, you know, what turned out to be a fairly comfortable win for Georgia in the SEC championship game and kind of an ugly performance against UCF, which Auburn may or may not have been, you know, going 100% towards trying to win. All of a sudden, now it's sort of a deflated, disappointing season for Auburn there in that regard. I imagine they're going to talk a lot about that and also talk about why they should still be considered a contender in the SEC West. I believe they probably should. And I imagine a lot will be discussed about, you know, Auburn doing what it did in Jordan-Hare Stadium a year ago and having to kind of come back and do that in opposing stadiums this year. Maybe the issue of flip-flopping the schedule with Georgia will come back up again. Maybe the issue of the fact that Auburn at some point under Gus Malzahn's got to prove it can win some of these games. Maybe that comes up. That's a lot of the conversation that will be had around Auburn. Obviously, Jared Stidham will be a focal point on that. Vanderbilt, we don't really care about. South Carolina, though, a bit more of an interesting discussion. You know, we heard Tory Gurley, the former South Carolina player, go on the Feinbaum show last week. I'd never heard of Tory Gurley. I don't give a rip what someone I've never heard of thinks about a game that's going to be played in September, but Gurley guaranteed a South Carolina victory over Georgia. You would imagine that South Carolina players today are going to be asked about, given the fact that they are the consensus number two team, how close is the gap between them and Georgia? Will a South Carolina player say something that gets them attention? Will a South Carolina player say something about throwing the Gamecocks' proverbial hat into the ring for the division here this year? That could be a fun one to watch a little bit later on. You would imagine that Will Muschamp will also be asked a lot of questions about his friend Kirby Smart. That is a little bit of an unusual dynamic, even though both Smart and Muschamp have done their part to downplay that. Nick Saban, I mentioned a moment ago to Mike Johnson, you know, yesterday he was sort of forced to admit that he has no idea if Jalen Hurts is going to transfer or not. I think if you're a Georgia fan, one of the things that you're thankful for right now is that Kirby Smart can talk openly and honestly. But his quarterback situation, he may still yet need to find out how good Fromm's going to turn out to be and if Justin Fields will really live up to the hype when he gets on the field. But in terms of the mystery of how these guys are going to handle and behave, I don't think that Smart has much to worry about there. It's a little different situation for Nick Saban, who does, I think, have to sort of tiptoe around a lot of this because of some of the things that have been said publicly by Tua Tagovailoa, by Lane Kiffin about Tua Tagovailoa, and about Jalen Hurts' dad as well. So kind of an interesting moment from Saban yesterday. Tennessee, in the midst of the Jeremy Pruitt controversy about his fitness to be a head coach, did get some good news. Once again, Jeremy Pruitt seemed to reaffirm that Trey Smith, the left tackle, who's been dealing with a unspecified medical issue, is going to be good to go for this upcoming season. I think that Smith is one of the best players in the SEC. I think he's clearly the best player on the Vols roster, and having him back is sort of almost an imperative for Tennessee towards having any kind of success here in 2018. They need Trey Smith as the anchor of that offensive line. It sounds like Jeremy Pruitt thinks that's exactly what's going to happen. I'll also mention this. Tom Herman, the Texas coach, talked a bit about his desire to renew the Texas-Texas A&M rivalry. This game hasn't been played in a while, and Herman saying this, I don't think necessarily you know, change the dynamic here too much. At some point in time, these two teams may play, but for a while now, it seems like that's not, you know, immediately on the verge of happening, which goes to show you college football can really change. Almost impossible to imagine a scenario not too long ago when the Aggies and the Longhorns didn't play. Now they never play, and they've sort of avoided each other even in bowl games when it seemed to be a possibility, which just goes to show you that, you know, even for the Georgia schedule, which, you know, in some respects seems cemented in stone, there are changes that can happen there. I've suggested I'm not so sure that Georgia should play Georgia Tech anymore every single year. I'm not sure that the value still exists. Many of you disagree with that, and I understand that, but this situation with the Aggies and the Longhorns is proof that nothing on the Georgia schedule is necessarily permanent, and maybe nothing's supposed to be permanent. We'll talk more about that, I'm sure, in the days and years ahead. But for now, we'll wrap up our SEC through. And here on a Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, I want to go back to the conversation I had a moment ago with Mike Johnson. And in reference to the audio from Georgia safety J.R. Reed, also earlier in the program, too. Now, once again, to be clear here, when J.R. Reed in the audio clip that you heard earlier said, hey, you know, we don't care about SEC championships, we're focused on a national championship, I think he's speaking figuratively there to say that, you know, in 2018, we're not going to be satisfied with just an SEC championship. Our goal is bigger than that. And every Georgia fan celebrates that perspective from J.R. Reed. Nothing about what J.R. Reed said is wrong there at all. Every Georgia fan celebrates that perspective. However, hearing Reed's words, they do remind me of what other people have said, you know, both Georgia fans in some respects, in some cases national media, about in this playoff age in which we live, that maybe somehow conference championships are becoming a bit devalued, and that maybe in the future there won't even be an SEC championship game anymore. And I hope that's not the case. I really do. And discussing this, Mike Johnson mentioned that he thinks the conference championships are still valuable and important in all of the various conferences. And that may be true for Mike, but it's also, I think, fair to say here, there's something about the SEC championship that's a little bit different than the other conference championship games. First of all, because the SEC was the first of those games. For a long time, it's been the most competitive of those games, given the fact that you've got, you know, major powerful teams on in both divisions. It gives you a heavyweight matchup as opposed to the Big Ten championship game that has often, you know, failed to provide that. Sometimes the ACC much the same way. The Big 12 Conference Championship game guarantees a rematch because there are only 10 teams in the league. It's essentially just a cash grab and sort of an attempt to placate the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. But there is prestige for the SEC Championship, and I don't believe that I have an SEC Champions t-shirt for 2017, but if I did have one, I'd wear it proudly. And I would do that even in front of an Alabama guy who may have a chance to brag about his team winning the national championship. There's still something to say about SEC championships. J.R. Reed's ultimately right when he says that a year after you've won the SEC, only more than that in the following season will do. Reed's 100% right about that. But sort of as far as this big picture conversation goes in college football, I hope the playoff doesn't grow to the point where it expands beyond the relevance of conference championships. For me, that's a step back for college football. I'd love to have you weigh in on that. That's our Dog Day Q&A for today. Do you think that SEC championships are still important? We'll hit some comments here. Both, if you're listening to the show, you can hit me up on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. If you're watching the show, you can weigh in and share your thoughts in the video comment section. Scott Harris says, I'd rather be playing in the SEC championship than not. And Scott's point that he brings up there as a part of our Dog Day Q&A answer is not an irrelevant point to make, because there are some people who say that Alabama actually benefited from not playing in the SEC championship a year ago. Kirby Smart explained how it helps recruiting. He was able to, Saban and his staff, able to kind of get out on the road in early December and have some advantages that maybe Georgia and Auburn did not quite have. And then when it comes to the playoff, Georgia had played the extra game where Alabama had that first week in December to rest. But I still agree with Scott on this. There's still a prestige about being in Atlanta. The Mercedes-Benz Stadium was rocking that day for Georgia-Auburn. It was an incredible atmosphere, and Georgia hoisted the trophy. In fact, if you're watching on video, you just saw Kirby Smart, trophy in hand, confetti falling down. That's a memory I won't soon forget, and it's one that I hope that Georgia fans are able to celebrate for years and years to come. Change is inevitable in some respects, but I hope that particular change doesn't come to college football. All right, we will wrap up here, get ready to close things out in kind of a cool way today. You know, we do our Gator Hater countdown every single day. We believe here that Georgia's most important rivalry is the Florida Gators. As I mentioned a moment ago, I almost don't care if Georgia even plays Georgia Tech anymore. It's just not a consequential game. Not because Tech can't win, just because I don't think the Tech is a program trying to compete at the highest level. I don't think that Georgia gets a lot from that game anymore. They don't compete for the same recruits. They don't have the same, you know, same level of importance placed on the sport as of right now. However, Florida's a completely different animal. Florida may not be good at the moment, but Florida wants to be back and compete once again at the championship level as it has before. Therefore, Gators remain a measuring stick for the dog. That's why we do the Gator Hater Countdown every single day. And today, there are exactly 100 days between now and the day that Georgia goes back to Jacksonville and beats Florida again. We'll see you tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza.